Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Welcome to The Healthy Mind. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis. It is March 27, 2012. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to The Healthy Mind. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. You can find me on Twitter as well. Follow me on Twitter, at Dr. Zafiridis. And the email with any questions, comments, criticisms, anything. I want to hear from you. The email, peter@thehealthymind.com. So, how are you today? How is everything going? Oh, can you imagine? We are at the end of March. April around the corner. Really, it's not like we've really had a winter anyway. But my goodness, moving straight into April. I hope everything is going well with you today. I've got a great, great program for you. Some really interesting news. You're going to want to stick around until the end of the show. Some very quick and easy ways to really change your behavior, particularly when it comes to temptation. So the latest news on that, we'll do some headlines. We have got ourselves a show, ladies and gentlemen. So I'm really glad you're here. Now, today, what was I going to start with? And you know, I had read a really interesting article, and it came back to me quite a bit over the week, this issue of cognitive dissonance. And I want to talk about that a little bit because it really affects us all, and we need to be aware of this psychological principle because it can affect the decisions that we make, and if we're not aware, others can take advantage of us through this principle of cognitive dissonance. So you're going to want to know a little bit about this. So I thought I'd talk about that today. But what exactly is cognitive dissonance? And cognitive dissonance is this feeling, it's this discomfort, uncomfortable tension, which we feel when we're holding two conflicting thoughts in our minds at the same time. And our minds will react instantly, and oftentimes unconsciously, to deal with this conflict of these two different ideas that we're trying to hold in our mind at the same time. Now, this tension will increase if the subject that we're thinking about is very, very important to us. How different, or what they call dissonant, the thoughts are that are conflicting. And if we are able or not to rationalize away the conflict between these two issues. It's a really interesting principle that continues to affect us every single day. And I'm going to give you a few examples here so that you can understand what I'm talking about. But it was a really fascinating principle that was first explored back in the 50s by a psychologist by the name of Leon Festinger. And what he found out was when we're holding these two ideas in our minds that are conflicting at the same time, we do one of three things. Either one, we're going to change our behavior. Number two, we're going to justify our behavior by changing the conflicting thoughts that we have in our minds. Or we're going to justify our behavior by adding new thoughts to our mind. All right, so what am I talking about? What is going on here? Well, let me give you an example. I'll go back to what Dr. Festinger did in the 50s to come up with this idea, and then we'll go from there, okay? So, back in the 50s, he used this example to explain how members of a certain cult who were persuaded by their leader that the earth was going to be destroyed on the 21st day of December in that particular year. The cult member had told them that they were going to be rescued by aliens. What happened next was incredible. The cult members actually increased their commitment to the cult when this didn't happen. They increased their commitment to the leader when December 21st came, and well, what do you know? No aliens. Now, how did he know this? Well, Dr. Festinger managed to infiltrate the cult, so he was following along doing experiments unbeknownst to anybody. Now, what does this all have to do with cognitive dissonance? Well, the dissonance between those two opposing thoughts, the conflict. On the one hand, I believe that this is happening. The aliens are coming. And on the other hand, they're thinking, oh my gosh, was I actually fooled by this leader who's a clown? That conflict was so great that they instead revised their beliefs to meet with the obvious facts. The facts that they generated to resolve the conflict between the aliens not being there and the leader perhaps deceiving them. So what did they think? Well, check this out. They believed through the actions of this amazing cult that these members were a part of, the aliens had decided not to destroy the earth, and in fact, they saved it. The cult members, instead of looking at reason that the cult leader was wrong, was deceiving them, chose, because of those two thoughts, the cult members decided an alternative explanation was right, that they couldn't have been fooled like that. There was too much wrapped up in it. Okay, this is cognitive dissonance. We have two conflicting thoughts occurring at the same time, and based on how much we believe or how we rationalize away, we can start believing certain thoughts even though they may not be true at all. Now, one of Dr. Festinger's classic experiments in the 50s was done on college students. He and his colleagues got students to lie about a task that was very, very boring. And what happened? Those students, they got between $1 and $20 to lie. What they found was those who only got paid a dollar had a much more difficult time in lying than those who got paid $20. The conflict between the small amount of money and lying was a greater cognitive dissonance to them rather than someone who got paid $20. That's a windfall, at least back in the 50s, that the lie didn't seem as bad and they didn't feel as comfortable. So I hope you're starting to see with some of these examples how cognitive dissonance works. It's a real thing that's going on in our minds. And then we feel as if we know the absolute truth as we're thinking it, when it may not even be close to that. Now, what are some real-life examples? Forget about the experiments that the psychologist did. And what are some real-life examples? All right, now what about people who are smoking? Smokers know that smoking is a bad habit. There's nothing good about it with regards to health. But some smokers will rationalize their behavior by looking on the bright side or the positive side of things. They may say, well, you know, I lose weight when I smoke, so that actually helps me. And that being overweight is a greater risk than smoking. So they continue to smoke. It's something in which they know that it is bad for their health, yet they continue to do the behavior. Those two thoughts are opposing and they butt up against each other. So we will do various things to justify in our minds why we are acting in the way that we are. And it happens all naturally. So we have to be careful, because those who try to influence us advertisers, companies will utilize this type of cognitive dissonance to get us in the door. Now, what am I talking about here? And again, I'm not coming down on Apple computers at all. I use Apple computers. That's all I have are Macs and my iPad, okay? I even have an iPhone. But what does Apple do? Apple makes you feel like you're part of a very important club when you buy your computer. Now, in reality, if we think about it, Apple computers and regular Windows computers work well. They're great computers, very, very powerful. Yet, the Mac computers have consistently been more expensive. Yet, people continue to buy them. Now, we can argue about how much better Apple is than Windows or back and forth, but they're essentially the same kinds of computers, yet folks like me are willing to buy Apple computers. And why? We say, well, it's worth it because it's so much better of a machine. It's so much easier to use. And we may spend twice as much on a comparable machine. It's that conflict of dissonance. Why am I buying this if it is so expensive? Yet I rationalize it in a way where I end up spending more money than maybe I needed to. This is why we need to be aware of cognitive dissonance. It can be a product, it can be an idea, it could be a candidate, what have you. These principles are real and they're happening in real time. So what do we do? What do we do? Well, be careful. You've got to be careful when it comes to cognitive dissonance because it is an essential technique that is used in persuasion to change people's beliefs and their attitudes and their behavior. You can let that tension be injected suddenly or allow it to build up, and then people can be moved to act in certain ways. Certain ways to buy, certain ways to vote. I think you get the picture. Now, another thing that you should be doing is think about it. Think about it yourself, because we all do this. We all make the rationalizations that we need to get through the days. Some of them, though, are bigger than others. Some of them, like in the case of the computer that I was telling you about, can be very costly to us. So take the time to think about this and understand it. Can help you tremendously to do so. And finally, be aware, because being aware of this can help us avoid some of the most dangerous consequences of cognitive dissonance. And this is believing our own lies. When you start feeling uncomfortable, stop and see if you can find that inner conflict. Then notice how you got there. If it was somebody else who put you there, make a note of it. Remember it. Because if you take the time to think about it, then you can choose more actively who or what can influence you or not. Cognitive dissonance and the ways that we can minimize its effects, particularly when it hurts us negatively. And that is one huge step to take down our road to the healthy mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, wow, this was yet another very busy week as it relates to health news. Now, the first story, both of these stories have gotten a lot of traction on thehealthymind.com, but the first story, the headline, Living Alone is Linked to Depression, a new study. And this really was the latest report on something that we've known very well. Certainly, the stress of isolation can take a huge toll on our emotional well-being. And it really is an irony that in this interconnected social media world of Facebook and Twitter, that we can be so connected to each other, it turns out that we feel even more isolated today than we have ever been before. It really is amazing. How many people do you think live on their own today, the percentage? It's really amazing. The number of people living on their own has doubled over the last 30 years to 1 in 3 in the United States, and that is the same in Europe as well. And according to the latest study that's been published in the BMC Journal of Public Health, this growing isolation is taking a toll on our emotional well-being. What they found was that the risk of depression, the way that they measured that, was by people that took antidepressants is almost 80% higher for those who are living alone compared to anyone who may be living either with their family or any kind of social group. Now, how did this all break up? And there were some differences between women and men. For women, 1/3 of the risk was due to factors such as a lack of education and low income. And for men, the biggest risk factors was a bad job climate and a lack of social support, and also if men drank quite a bit. So we've known, though, for a long time that living alone increases the risk of mental health problems for those that are elderly, older in life, and also for single parents. But this was the first study, and it was a good one, about 3,500 working-age, middle-aged men and women. So these are middle-aged folks and younger adults who were being studied, and they wanted to see how much of a risk factor was living alone compared to other risk factors for depression, like your socioeconomic status, maybe your health risk factors, and etc. And it really showed a difference. The stress of loneliness was huge. According to Dr. Laura Rayback from the Finnish Institute of Occupational Health, she stated, quote, "Our study shows that people living alone have an increased risk for developing depression. Overall, there was no difference in the risk of depression by living alone for either men or women. But poor housing conditions and a lack of social support were the main factors for this increased risk." Now, this is where it gets a bit more ominous, because Dr. Rayback looked at this data and she came to the conclusion that the actual risks in this population might be worse. Again, she states, quote, "This kind of study usually underestimates the risk because the people who are most at risk tend to be the people who are least likely to complete the follow-up." End of quotes. So we really know that there are many risk factors to depression. The state of your affairs, finances, the health risk factors that you have, whether you smoke or drink, your family history. But now, particularly to those of working age, young and middle-aged adults, we need to realize and be respectful of the fact that living alone may be a huge risk factor for being depressed. And hopefully data like this continues to develop our understanding and hopefully reducing the incidence of depression in people of all ages, but certainly in those of working age. Okay, now the next piece of news. Oh, this was such a great news story and a great study. The headline, "A Very Quick and Easy Strategy to Avoid Temptation." Okay, so here's the picture, right? You're sitting there, right in front of you, a fork and about 12 inches separate you from the most beautiful and delicious chocolate dessert on the table. I mean, it is beautiful, just glistening with chocolate and creaminess inside. Ugh, you look away, you try to fight the urge, but it doesn't help. Your mouth begins to water. You grab for the fork and then you say, no, I can't. It looks so delicious, but I can't do this. I can't. So what do? Are you able to resist it? Would you believe the words that you use in resisting temptation can literally be the difference between your success and failure? Oh, yes, it is true. I mean, something as simple as a slight change in your language can really make that much of a difference. This was according to the findings of a new study out of the Journal of Consumer Research. What they found were that individuals who responded to temptation with the words, "I don't," versus the words, "I can't," are more able to resist. The words. According to the researchers, quote, "Whether it's buffalo wings at a tailgate or heaping plates of calories at the Thanksgiving Day dinner table that is your downfall, help is merely a couple words away," end of quotes. Now, the research was done both at the University of Houston and Boston College. But why does this happen? Why? Why is it that if you say, "I don't," versus "I can't," when thinking about something tempting, you're better able to overcome it? Well, according to the research, they said that "I can't" to temptation really signals deprivation and the loss from giving up something that people really want. So when you're looking at a piece of pumpkin pie, as the researchers explain, saying "I can't eat pumpkin pie" signals deprivation. But if you say, "I don't eat pumpkin pie," this approach signals to yourself and to others that there is determination and empowerment within you, and it makes the refusal strategy much more effective. Now, in this research, they studied individuals over various "I don't" and "I can't" strategies overall, and what they found was, "I don't" actually works over "I can't." The author stated, quote, "What's great about this research is that it suggests a strategy that is simple, straightforward, and easy to implement. And most importantly, it works." So the next time you're sitting tempted by that incredibly rich, impossibly decadent, dark chocolate dessert, don't sweat it. Just say, "I don't," because now you know a very quick and easy way to help fight off the temptation. "I don't" versus "I can't." Amazing. Okay, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the rest of the news in a segment I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, now, the first headline. How does the order of choices affect consumer decisions? Let's say you've got to book a flight, choose a hotel, and rent a car. Does it matter which thing you shop for first? A new study in the Journal of Consumer Research finds that the order of choices does affect consumer decision. The next headline, MIT Research, the power of being heard. MIT researchers show that when it comes to conflict between two groups, the group with less power benefits more from sharing its perspective, according to a new paper published in the Journal of Experimental Social Psychology. And finally, the headline, popcorn. The snack with even higher antioxidant levels than fruits and vegetables. Popcorn's reputation as a snack food that's actually good for health popped up a few notches today, as scientists reported that it contains more of the healthful antioxidant substances called polyphenols than fruits and vegetables. Oh, moms and dads, don't get mad at me. I'm just a messenger here, okay? Blame the science. Oh, dear. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've done it again, you and I. We have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. As always, the website, www.thehealthymind.com. Please visit that. I'm updating that almost daily now. We're also out there on Twitter. You can follow me there, at Dr. Zafiridis. Don't forget also the podcast is on iTunes as well. Thank you all for rating it. And I do appreciate the emails. Please keep them coming. I want to hear from you. The email address, as always, peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on the Healthy Mind Network.